Welcome to The Brains Behind It, the official podcast of brainhackers.com. The source for smart strategies to improve your life, one brain hack at a time. In this podcast, we talk to the leaders and innovators behind great organizations and find out the secret to their success. Here's your host, editor-in-chief of brainhackers.com and two-time Guinness record holder for memory, Dave Farrow.
Hey there, brain hackers. Today's interview is may actually be alarming to a lot of people. So, you know, viewer discretion is advised. We're talking to Robert Utaro. He is a writer of the book To the Survivors, One Man's Journey as a Rape Crisis Counselor and True Stories of Sexual Violence. We're going to actually talk about the brain's reaction to sexual violence, how it can permeate your entire life and affect, you know, everything that you can imagine, and also what people can do about it in a very real, hands-on way that's based on real stories of real people in the real world. So coming up. Hey, Robert, welcome to the show.
How you doing? Thanks for having me.
So, thank you for being on here. I wanted to cover this topic, and obviously there's so many different ways you could cover this topic. I mean, even now with, what goes on in the news lately, there's millions of different political angles on this topic, and I wanted to get down to really the human element, and kind of get past the headlines, you know. And the human element is what you were dealing with as a rape crisis counselor, and your book is really, really, really graphic, but really hard hitting. And it's really, I think it's really important for people to read. What you figured out and got down to is really almost an inspirational way, you know, to look at this. That is to, you know, look at this horrible situation that people are in after experiencing sexual violence, see how it permeates and just riddles so many different parts of their lives. But also, you know, you asked a very important question: what now? What can we do about it? So, why don't you start with some of the really hard hitting stories and what you learned from them, and you know, any advice you have for anybody who's in this situation or is a, you know, friend of somebody in that situation.
Sure. First of all, I just want to thank you again for bringing me on the show and talking with me. I really appreciate it. And secondly, I just want to tell people who are listening that we will talk about some very heavy things, as you've already alluded to, so that I want people to take care of themselves. So for them to do anything in life that brings them peace, whether it's music or exercise or meditation or art or anything after listening to this program, that there are resources out there that they can talk to someone, that they are not alone. No matter what. So during and after, to please take care of yourself while listening. That being said, I've learned so much really through working with rape survivors, and not just rape survivors, all the counselors, all the amazing people, the advocates, the volunteers, all the people that do this work, that care so deeply, the significant others that are impacted by it. It affects so many people. But what I can tell you is, as horrible as the crime is, as disturbing as it is, and I will never shy away from that, I find so much hope and inspiration in these people. I see so much strength in these people. I almost think if they can survive this, if they can live healthy lives, if they can heal from sexual abuse as children, for example, how can we do in our lives? Can we get past our own issues in our lives? And in my book, To the Survivors, there's true stories of women and men and one transgendered man. It is written stories, there's written poetry and interviews with people. And in their stories, it shows a process. It's not so easy. It's not like, you know, it happens and everything's amazing. No, some of these people go years and years, but over time they start to heal. They begin to be able to share with another human being. They can, you know, at one point in time, they never thought they could talk to someone. And then 10 years later, they're speaking at, you know, a rally in front of 200 people, or they're talking in high schools and colleges, and they're really impacting people through their stories. Their stories are deeply important. Everyone's story is important. Everyone on this earth matters. And they speak words of hope and strength and empowerment. And I'm deeply amazed by them. And I continue to do this work. If healing wasn't real, if people didn't really grow from this, I wouldn't continue doing this work. It wouldn't make any sense.
You're not just listening to people ranting, although they have they have a right to rant. You're actually, you know, in the act of hearing the story, it is coming to terms with the reality that happened and also the reality that you live in right now. I mean, that's the basis of even psychotherapy or any of the sciences of the mind is when you, it actually goes back to ancient cultures, when you tell a story, you kind of take the power away from it. You take the power onto yourself. When you share a story, you share that power and you become empowered.
Yep. Part of what I teach is I try through the book and through in just my life, I try to teach people how to respond to it. Not only how do we help people that experience it, but how do we respond to it? Many of us are having trouble responding to it. We're reacting poorly. We're not as compassionate sometimes as we should be.
You're not like a significant other or a best friend or something. How do other people who are hearing about it respond?
Could be a cop, could be, you know, a nurse, could be a teacher, could be a priest, could be anyone. How are we really treating people that come forward? Because if we treat them poorly, first of all, it's very difficult to talk about in the first place. But if we treat them poorly, if we don't believe them, if we don't listen to them, right, they're most likely going to shut down, could be for another 10 years or whatever it might be. So what you're saying to get rid of that story is helpful and healing. And if we're not embracing that, if we're not welcoming it, it's going to keep stay inside and it's going to fester and it's just going to get worse and worse and worse over time. And you see that in life.
Yeah, no, I think that this is kind of the not just sexual violence, but trauma in general, and how it affects people. It's this big thing that's holding down all of society. I think we all are affected by it, and nobody's talking about it. And I'm even in my experience, you know, I'm dealing with, you know, kids in school. It's a memory program that I teach. Well, I don't know how many young people are dealing with things at home, you know, and like, you know, we grade a child in school, and I'm not to say that it's just children that deal with this, but I'm just saying, you know, as one example, you know, you grade a child in school, and you just think that grade reflects their academic ability or their brains, and so many times it reflects the time they have for homework, whether they feel loved, whether they feel safe, all these other things that come around to it, and we never really ask those tough questions. And you're right. We leave it, to be honest, we leave it up to the experts too much. We think that because somebody is talking to a counselor for a half an hour once a week, then that thing called trauma, oh, that's being taken care of. Now my job as a teacher or whoever is only supposed to handle all this other stuff. So, well, no, they're living with that trauma 24/7. They talk about it a half an hour a week, but they're living with it 24/7. So the thing I like about what you do is, you know, you were the counselor. You're not getting into he said, she said. You're not in law enforcement. You're not getting into the political side of it. You were simply talking to someone about their process of healing, not vengeance or anything else, their process of healing. And I think if we could codify your data, I think it would be very scientific. I think it'd be very, very interesting. But it would also be a really good model for how everybody should think of this.
Thank you. I mean, I personally believe we talk too much. We don't listen enough. Human beings, we need to listen more. And I knew from day one, from the moment I began this work, I knew I would just listen to people because I think what they experience is truly horrific. I believe it's evil and demonic. So why wouldn't we listen to them? And it's funny you bring up schools. I teach in schools. I substitute in schools. And I'm currently a substitute health teacher. I teach middle school students. I love my students, even though they drive me nuts sometimes. But, like, you know, I love them. And
just like kids, right? What's that? Just like kids, anyways.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I love them, and I love the job. They drive me nuts sometimes. But what was so, you know, interesting, sometimes we're talking about, you know, what stresses you out and what, how do we deal with life? How do we deal with coping skills? And sometimes their answer is immediately, oh, therapy, medication. I'm like, that's it? That's all you have? So because you go to therapy, all of a sudden you're healed of your problems? If that was the case, all these people that go to therapy would be healed. Just yesterday, I told my students, because we're going to start talking about mental health next week, I told my students that I'm a Ray Price counselor. I wrote this book, that I do this work. They didn't know that. And one girl immediately brought up prostitution. And one girl, this girl who I believe is, something's going on with this girl's life. That's all I could say. She was all animated and kind of interested in the work that I do. And she started talking to me about prostitution. And I'm like, bring it up in class if you want. I have no issues talking about that. This is deeply connected to drug addiction, to violence, to rape, to sexually abuse. Mm-hmm. So yeah, in schools, grades, I don't give them tests. I don't give them many grades because I could agree with you more. I don't believe a test and their grades really quantify their intelligence. I don't think it quantifies their wisdom. I don't think it speaks to who they are. And to your point, things are going on in people's homes that we don't know about. So they can come into school and we see behavioral issues and we get frustrated with them, whatever it might be. But what's really going on? And I know at least one of my students has already been raped. So that's a problem. And what are we doing? So yeah, there's deeper things going on.
All right. So do you want to start with a story here, or do you want to maybe say the one thing I want to cover here is I want you to tell, you know, some stories if you can, but not to sensationalize, but because it's important to hear the stories. But the other thing is I was hoping you could also give advice to people who are friends of significant others or, you know, professionals who encounter this as to, you know, what to actually do. And just, I'm going to give a little caveat to this. I've worked with neuroscientists talking about, you know, memory. And of course, you know, that comes into things like false memory syndrome and therapy and all sorts of things. And all I'm going to say about that entire experience, including like I was just about to be hired to be an expert witness in a court case about something that was violence related. Everything was so clinical. I thought to myself, I don't want any one of these people that I have just talked to talk to the actual victim. Everything was so, they were not treated like human beings anymore. And it's really important to be clinical. It is important to look at the data and be objective, and especially if you're going to make a legal decision. Absolutely. I believe, you know, evidence and rule of law and all that. I don't think it's in conflict. But man, it was just, I want to get back to the kind of human side of just listening to people. And it just seemed like they were treating this human being like such a commodity. So I want you to talk about that and talk, how should somebody in that professional situation react when they hear about a story of trauma?
I think they need to listen first. I believe they should first believe them and listen to them. And one of the skills, I think one of the many skills of a good counselor, because, you know, counselors have a tough job, is what do they say and what not to. I think it's important sometimes to maybe take off their lens of maybe that role, if that's hurtful, I don't know, but it's more asking questions. When people are sexually assaulted, when people are raped, they're having their power and control taken from them. So how can we give their power and control back to them? So sometimes it's as simple as just listening and just asking certain questions. What do you want to do? Would you like to do this? Do you know what I mean? Not you must do this, you have to do this. I never tell people to go to the police. I never tell people to go to get a rape kit. If they want to, that's fine. And we'll support them and we'll help you in the process, whatever you need. But some people want to go to court. Some people choose to make that decision and then change. So it's about supporting them and helping them in their lives and being a bridge to where they need to go. Should they go to a counselor? Should they really go to an online chat group? Who is the person that can maybe help them? What do they need? And we need to listen to them first to hear what they need and what what is helpful for them, and then try and help them that way. I don't know if that answered your question, but
no, it really does. And also I understand a lot of the reason why, you know, somebody would not trust the system. I don't think the systems are very well put together. I just remembering of one news story not too long ago of like warehouses full of rape kits that haven't been analyzed. I believe that was in Chicago. I apologize if I got the place wrong, but this was like, you know, big news a number of years ago. Well, they still haven't been analyzed. It's still news to me. I think you speak to a really good point of listening and listening. I mean, even if you don't believe, listen as if you believe, I think would be a good bit of advice, because, you know, we do exist in a world where people make stuff up and they do lie and things like that. But I would think that, and I think people are incredibly naive if they don't think that happens, because it happens a whole lot. But I would think, though, that a good strategy, if someone was a police officer, would be listen to somebody as if they believe, and they're going to tell you more. And if there is some flaw, if there is some lie in there, the more they speak, that would be exposed. And the more, and also if somebody, you know, obviously is telling the truth, the more they speak, the more it would become completely obvious that they're telling the truth. And I think approaching these situations with more humanity and listening to somebody and actually having an open mind actually might get to the truth faster than trying to be super skeptical or challenging, because then people get their back up and they're trying to prove something rather than say something, you know? It always fascinated me in all the psychology about police, you mentioned the police. I'm going to go down this a little bit. All the psychology about police and just any perpetrator of any crime, you know, the police, when they're interviewing, they don't do the good cop, bad cop in the real world. Most of the time what they do is they're like, hey, I'm on your side. I know what it's like. You know, you want some alcohol, you break a window, you didn't think it's a big deal. Like you talk to them as if you understand that their crime was not a big deal, and that gets them talking more. The whole rule is to get them talking more. So why the immediate gut reaction to be adversarial sometimes when dealing with rape and trauma? I think it's just people just don't have the training. They don't realize this, you know? And I think you'd be able to separate facts and fiction much better if people just did what you're saying and listened. Well, what do you think of that?
I think you bring up a fascinating point. I mean, I think in many professions, and maybe all professions, police, lawyers, whatever it is, you know, there's some incredible cops that truly care, and some cops that are criminals themselves. You know, there's some amazing priests in the world who truly talk about the love and mercy of God, and some priests who commit rape. So there's, you know, in many professions, same with teachers, whatever it might be.
And we only hear the stories of the people who do the bad things too. So, yeah.
Sure. But yeah, I just, what I've seen and what I know to be true is, yeah, listening is far more. Imagine if you yourself want to talk, a good thing or a bad thing. Say you're hurt, say you're, you know, frustrated, whatever it is, and you just want to talk to someone, and I just talk to you and I tell you what to do and I don't even listen to you. How would you feel? Right? You wouldn't feel, you'd feel annoyed. You might feel frustrated. You might feel angry. You might feel like, why would I talk to this person in the first place?
Yeah. And most of all, I think it's, I would feel like you don't understand me or what I'm going through because you didn't actually let me say what I'm going through, even if you do, you know?
So many people feel alone. And one of the powers of the book and one of the powers of people sharing stories and the work that people do is that it shows that you're not alone. And now everyone's different and everyone has their own story. And it's not to say everyone can relate to everything, but you're not alone in this experience. Someone else has been through something similar, and you know, they may have learned some things along the way, and they can share that with you if you want to take that. You know, you brought up something earlier. You asked me to tell you a story. There's two stories I'd love to tell you quickly. One, I'll never forget this, of a woman I know, sexually abused as a kid for years. And we were hanging out once, and you know, she was telling me she just drew the word, she just wrote the word sex. And then after that, she drew a picture of the devil. And so why would she do that? And to her, right, sex is seen as demonic for her. Why? Well, look at her childhood. There's another story in the book, To the Survivors, is a man named Jim. And he was raped by a priest. And he's an older man now, and he's a good friend of mine. And I asked him, hey man, here's what I'm doing for the book. I'd love to hear your story. Would you like to contribute to the book? And he's like, oh, I'd love to, you know? So we came to my home, we have food, we have some wine, and we recorded the story, and I didn't know what would come out. And after we were done, he said, do you mind if I bring this to my male support group? Can I ask them if they want to contribute? I said, no problem. Two men wanted to contribute from that. All three of them are in the book, To the Survivors. So I didn't even meet two of them before. That shows the power of speaking and sharing with others and then giving them the comfortable space if they want to. And if you don't, that's okay. It's okay if you don't want to share. But if you do, come and talk if you want to. You also mentioned significant others. And in this crime, you mentioned politics, and so many women experience horrific things, and we cannot, I don't believe words truly can truly adequately describe the horrors that women experience. But this is not just women. Men and little boys are sexually abused. People experience trauma, not just rape. It is a human issue of all genders. It is a spiritual issue, and significant others are also impacted. I have experienced many male significant others who suffer more than their female, you know, woman, their wife, their girlfriend who's been raped, because it's like the world doesn't make sense to them anymore. Someone they love so much was violently raped. It's horrific. And I once went to a male conference for male survivors, and the women, it's their wives gushing tears, like lost, because their husband that they have been married to for maybe 20 years, they might have just recently learned that they were sexually abused as a child. The tears are gushing. So it impacts people directly. It impacts people indirectly, and significant others and friends and society. Great effects.
Yeah, and I think that's really important to mention, because the the significant other relationship, you know, boyfriend, girlfriend, married, or whatever, it is one of protection. It's one of safety, and it's one of taking care. If you want to even go back to the traditional gender roles, which are still in our DNA, whether we like it or not, you know, the men want to protect and the women want to care for, you know, and vice versa, depending on what you feel. But both of those are good things, and both of those feel tremendous pain and hurt when there's something you can't fix. Imagine if you were caring for somebody in the hospital and they were terminally ill. You couldn't do anything. That's the powerlessness that you feel emotionally if somebody is suffering from a trauma and you can't do anything about it. And it's heartbreaking. And yeah, the trauma, we can get into talking about the brain a little bit when it comes to a lot of the data. I know when it comes to trauma is that traumas are relived. Traumas are repeated over and over, and traumas also spiral out. There's people who have this kind of secondary trauma because somebody has experienced a trauma. Not to get, you know, too snowflake or anything, but it really does have this spiraling out effect. I wanted to bring in a little bit of neuroscience here because it is the brains behind it. We do brain hackers. Some people might actually be thinking of what is the real data around trauma. And there's a lot of controversy and everything, but there's a few things that are pretty much agreed upon. And essentially, here's the really interesting thing about healing that I want to ask you about, is there is a method in psychology and neuroscience to heal from trauma and phobias and things like that. And essentially what it is trauma is created through a very powerful event that has a lot of emotion tied to it that is non-consensual. So trauma could be created because you fell off a cliff or something and hurt yourself. Like, you could be terrified of cliffs as a result because you did not consent to falling. As weird as that can sound, something happens. So this is why torture is so terrible. Yet some people, you know, may have a kink and choose to act out some parts of torture for fun, right? And that's the human condition. Everybody has millions of different things that excite them and scare them and everything. And sometimes human beings like to be scared, like horror movies and roller coasters. But if you were to take somebody and force them to sit in a roller coaster chair right beside somebody who's having a great time and loving it, and that person, you know, sitting there is there against their will and they want out and they're tied, that would be traumatic in the extreme. That would be extreme torture for that person. So the point is, and this is what's really fascinating from a neuroscience perspective, and again, this is all clinical, is that it's the same experience. There really is no different way to talk about the experience. It's the same experience, except you didn't want it or you did want it. And it is that feeling of powerlessness. You have no power over the situation. And I think it's a survival mechanism. Our brain wants to survive, so we want to have power over situations we don't have power. So then, generally speaking, what happens in the brain is it starts to repeat over and over the trauma in the hopes that it'll kind of figure it out. Like, hey, next time this happens, I'm going to take control. I'm going to fix it. I'm going to solve it. And it's incredibly re-traumatizing, but that is your brain's natural process to try to understand something that essentially it doesn't understand. It doesn't understand why it was forced to do something it didn't want to do, right? And the interesting thing about healing from, not just trauma, but like, let me just say things like phobias, something more mild, something that you're just afraid of, is to experience it. I mean, obviously, you know, we don't want anyone to do anything dangerous or anything that's going to hurt them. But let's say, let's take it out of the sexual realm for a moment. If you're afraid of tarantulas, and through, you know, counseling and things like that, you get a tarantula to walk on your hands and everything, then you're not going to be nearly as afraid of tarantulas. But the whole reason why that therapy works is because it's voluntary. Again, if the therapist holds your hand down and forces a tarantula on your arm, you're going to be even more traumatized and more afraid. So it's all about that consent. That is, what do I want? And man, that is the crux of it. And it's so interesting because we identify all of our psyche around what we desire and what we want. And the thing that, and this is my final point of the thesis that I want you to talk about, because I think this is the most important thing that I discovered in my research, is the thing that makes the sexual trauma so difficult is that you can have different levels of want. Okay. And what I mean is your body can like something and even enjoy something where your mind hates it. And that can be incredibly traumatizing. There's a lot of examples where, men have been abused, yet they have erections. And right, one of the biggest traumas that they experience is the disconnect from that is they think that they somehow made it happen or wanted it because their body wanted it. And there's actually a lot of neuroscience evidence around this that we seem to have two brains. Men and especially women have two brains when it comes to sex. And a lot of times the body reacts to sexual activity in a positive way just because it's safer, you know, just to avoid physical trauma and friction. You know, your body can react with lube and things like that. So your body can react in a positive way as if it's turned on when really it's just protecting you. I talked to a good friend of mine who's a survivor of sexual assault, and I told her that one little thing, and she said that thought changed her life, because for a good 10 years she was blaming herself. She thought that she brought it on herself. She was like very, very young, but she thought she brought it on herself because she got aroused. And I said, well, no, your body was just protecting you. Because that's what it does. That's what its job is. And it wanted to make sure you didn't get scarred, you know? So I want you to talk a little bit about that, because that's some real science and data. And I've not heard anybody talk about it. It might even be uncomfortable for people to talk about, but I don't give a crap, because it really has helped a lot of people. So talk a little bit about what I'm saying there. Am I full of shit? Am I right? What do you think?
Are you full of shit? No, you're not. Are you a rape crisis counselor? You sound like one.
I have a lot of female friends and I have ears, you know.
No, you are, you're 100% right. And what you've alluded to, first of all, think about what you just said. A woman, a female friend of yours who's been sexually assaulted said that changed her life, that made such an impact in her life. Think about how important that is. Okay. So this happens sadly all the time. I would say many times, even with men. So what you already said, you know, men who have an erection, who might even ejaculate, think of what that does to the mind. Mm-hmm. That they're being abused. They might think they wanted it. They might think they enjoyed it. They might think they, you know, brought it on upon themselves. No kid brings this on upon themselves. No one wants to be raped against their consent, against their will, right? So especially like children, no. But what that does to the mind from a kid to an adult, it's horrific. So if they can understand that, no, you didn't like that, no, you didn't want that, no, you didn't enjoy that, that is just the body reacting independent of yourself. There's a physiological response to trauma that is out of our control. And that's one of the words, it's control. Things happen out of our control. We cannot control sometimes what our bodies do. We tend to think that we can, and we sometimes think we can control everything. In fact, most of existence we simply cannot control. So why do we waste our time and energy trying to control it, right? Can't do it. And all that causes stress and anxiety. You know what I mean? Like, and that's what you see in some of our issues, some of our control issues that exist in the world, where we're too, you know, so controlling. Usually that's because someone lost control at some point in time. So what you have touched upon, I'm working with a woman right now, and what I see in life, there's a lot of good people. I see really good people, beautiful people inside that think they're ugly. Beautiful people that are so ashamed. Beautiful people that have no self-esteem. Beautiful people that want to die. Why? And I tell them, there's truth and there's lies. Okay? Listen to truth. Believe in truth. Do not listen to lies. Do not listen to the nonsense of this world. Okay? Because there's a lot of it. All right? Listen to truth. Listen to lies. That's up to you, what you listen to. Right. So this woman specifically is having trouble because of what you said. She feels like she wanted to get raped by a stranger on the street because her body reacted in a certain way. Think of what that does to the mind. Think what that does inside to this person. How is that person supposed to heal? That person will not heal if she continues to believe that she wanted it.
Yeah. And it affects. Well, in this case, it was a family member
that she did it. Her whole life will change.
Yeah. Well, and in this case, it was a family member, but it was also, I think it affected all the way that she sees men, and she sees herself in relationships with men. She, you know, met some guys who were really great, obviously some guys who were jerks too, but at the end of the day, she thought that she was somehow this kinky, weird person in a way that she liked something that she didn't like and whatever. And it just kind of popped that bubble and said, no, I wasn't into that. And there's also the case, and I want to ask if you've seen this before. I have a male friend who was drawn into sexual activity very, very young and did not know it was wrong. Like, I'm talking incredibly young. And he enjoyed it a great deal. And then later on found out it was wrong and found out that it was something done to him by an older adult. And the trauma from that, because in his head at the time, he didn't know it was a bad thing. He didn't know what was going on. It's just something physically felt good. And the disconnect from that to understand that it was still against your consent because you weren't knowledgeable enough to consent, you know? Talk a little bit about that and if you've had stories like that as well.
Yes, I believe that's one of the most horrific things of the world. I believe it's one of the biggest sins in the world. I believe that children, you can mold children in any ways. You can teach them good things. You can teach them hard work and respect and teach them all these things. You can teach them how to shoot. You can give them a gun. You can teach them how to hate. You can teach them rape. So when children are forced into stuff, depending on the age too, right? I work with little kids all the time. Depending on how we teach them, what we show them, how sad that they may think it's normal, because to them it is normal because that's all they know. When their brain is, we're talking about the brain. Mm-hmm. Childhood is, I think, I don't know if this is true or not, but I believe it's the most formidable years because they're learning so much. They're sponges of knowledge. So again, when you teach them love and teach them how to read, teach them how to play an instrument, you'll see where they grow to, right? When you teach them, when you put them in a cult and you teach them all these horrific things, these demonic things, and an adult abuses their power and sexually abuses a kid, brings them into porn, whatever sick thing they're doing, and the kid sadly thinks that's normal, that is going to have an effect. Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean it will cripple them for life, but it will have an effect. And I think it's one of the most disgusting things in this world.
So tell us a little bit, we've dug down a little bit in the tunnel about as far as I want to go in the negative. Let's go into the positive. What, talk to people about, as a counselor, talk to somebody who's experienced this. Give them some advice if you can, or direction, or just some of the insights you've had from your writing of this book.
Yeah, my advice is, we believe you, we listen to you, we love you. You are not alone. You're never alone, even when it feels like you're alone. And there are people out there that will really listen to you. And if you find someone that doesn't, go find someone else. Okay, it is all up to you as to what you share, how much you share, who you share it to. Might not be me, might not be you. It might be a counselor, might not be a counselor, might be a teacher, a friend, whoever it might be. Someone that listens to you, someone that you trust, and someone that you know will take care of you. It's up to you, but you can heal from this. I see it. I see it all the time. If I didn't, I wouldn't continue doing this. Okay, people get better. I'm not saying it's easy. I've never said it's easy. Life is difficult for all of us. But you can grow from this, and there's help out there. There's online resources. There's many things that you can tap into in life: music, prayer, meditation, exercise, yoga, so many different things, drawing, reading, writing, any form of art, dance. There's a spiritual component to this. God loves you more than you know, even if you don't even believe in God. You are never alone. You're not forgotten.
Wow, that's beautiful. And I really can't add to that anymore. Can't improve on this at all. This has been really touching, really heartfelt. I really thank you for being on the show and writing about all these stories. And you know, keep it up. Write as many volumes as are necessary, because not only do we need to listen more, but other people, you know, still need to hear about this. We need to hear these stories from everyday people, not just the headlines. We need to, you know, talk about it. We need to get rid of the taboo so we can hopefully make a better world.
I couldn't agree more. And I thank you for having me on the show. And I'm serious. You sound like a rape crisis counselor. You sound like a really good counselor. So you might want to consider it.
Well, I don't know about that. I think part of me is I'm too clinical. Like I also have that highly skeptical side, not of individual stories. I would never, never get into that political side, but I do have that sort of analytical. I like to figure out how the brain is working and stuff, and I think I might get a little too cold for this sort of work, but I definitely want to hear your story, and I think I'm the perfect person to interview you about all the counseling that you've done. And I think everybody has to be a counselor of some sort. I don't know anybody who hasn't been affected by this in their life. And like you said, male and female growing up, I heard stories from both genders. I never heard of it. It was only when politics got so divisive that I heard of it as a gendered issue. But as far as I can tell, it's a human issue that we need to talk about, you know?
And yes, we need to look at the brain, but what I saw today is I see a glimpse of your heart today. We need to.
Oh man, let me go put that back. Let me go stuff that back down. No, hey man, I appreciate that. I really do, and I appreciate you. And I will think about it. Thank you very much for being on the show.
Thank you so much. Peace.
Thank you for listening to The Brains Behind It, and remember to check out brainhackers.com for more. If you have a suggestion for the next interview or comment, please email editor@brainhackers.com. If you want a free 30-minute marketing consultation from Dave Farrow and his team, then email editor@brainhackers.com.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.